This is a Black Talk Radio news report from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is January 19, 2016, and we are speaking with Max Parthas of the New Abolitionist Movement about the campaigns of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, both of whom are seeking the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. Max resides in South Carolina, where Hillary Clinton enjoys overwhelming support from black voters. Let's talk to Max about these issues and why Hillary Clinton is doing so well with black voters and Sanders seems to be polling poorly. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News, Max. Good to speak to you as always.
Peace, Brother Scotty. It's good to be back here again.
Well, Max, I wanted to specifically get your opinion. You live there in South Carolina, and I've been hearing for months now about the high support that Hillary Clinton enjoys among black voters. We know that right now the Democratic contest for the nomination will first take place in Iowa, and then you will have the New Hampshire primaries, which will then be followed by South Carolina, which will be one of the May 1st of the southern states where you have large populations of black voters. And we're hearing that Hillary Clinton enjoys so much support, and I'm just trying to figure out why, Max.
Well, Scotty, I really can't tell you why they do. All I can say is they don't know enough about her. That I'm certain. Maybe it's a sexist thing where it's, you know, just women are supporting her because she's a woman, because, you know, she plays the sex card often. Maybe it's because her husband was the first black president, according to a lot of people here in South Carolina. I don't know. But I do know for certain that if they knew what she was really about and what her history includes, there wouldn't be an 82% rating among African Americans here in South Carolina for her. It just wouldn't be. I mean, Hillary Clinton, as we've spoke of time and time again on New Abolitionist Radio, was not just a first lady spectator, she was an active participant in the launch of the initial public offering of the first private prisons here in the United States, which became now Global Be Homeless. When they started, the Clintons, their campaign, three strikes and minimum sentencing and all of their, you know, no more revolving door rhetorics, there was maybe 200 and more like about 300,000 prisoners nationwide. We've got 2.5 million now. And that's all directly related to what they put into play. And all of those people that went into those prisons earned money for them because they had their own money while he was a president and she was first lady invested in those IPOs. They made a fortune on slavery, and to this day, still make money on slavery. As we reported on New Abolitionist Radio, some of their top bundlers were literally prison lobbyists.
Well, yeah, I would wanted to bring that up, but before we talk about that specific point, you said you're mentioning slavery in present tense. I thought slavery was abolished in 1865 and then ratified in December of 1865 by Congress, and it ended slavery in this country. You mean to tell me that's not true?
Well, for the sake of argument, because I already know you know this, there is no point in history where slavery ended ever, period, at all. Not one day, not one minute, not one second. Immediately put into place after the so-called emancipation, which Frederick Douglass denounced in 1888, and immediately after the 13th Amendment with its infamous exception clause, which allows prisoners to be slaves, they had prisons already constructed for the specific purpose of rounding up those very same people that were supposed to be free and turning them into prisoners for lease to the railroads and to the mines and sometimes to the very plantations where they had just walked off from. So that continued on until 1928 in Alabama. Then it was transferred from there into the chain gangs. And we've all heard of the chain gangs and seen the pictures of young black boys, 12, 13 years old, chained up together, working the fields. That went on all the way up to 1934 with the birth of Unicor, which is a private corporation, a subsidiary of the United States, Inc., which is worth $900 million a year right now, doing nothing but providing prison slave labor. And all of them went through the exception clause as the exploitative factor, because it says slavery shall be abolished except for prisoners duly convicted.
Now, you pointed out that Hillary Clinton, her entire political career, along with that, with her husband, I don't think you can really divorce the two from their positions and whatnot. I mean, if you're not going to divorce somebody over infidelity with a White House intern, then certainly, you know, she's not going to divorce him over his hand in modern mass incarceration. In fact, she embraced that. She also went out and she stomped for those very policies as First Lady. And as I like to point out in her book, a ripoff from an African proverb, what's the name? It takes a village. Yeah, where she was arguing for zero tolerance in school. And we saw what zero tolerance looks like right there in South Carolina when a black girl was snatched up and thrown across the floor by a white police officer. So you mentioned specifically, though, about taking money from the private prison lobbyists. It was recently that Hillary Clinton stopped accepting money from the private prison lobbyists after a meeting with Black Lives Matter supporters where she was called out for taking money from the private prison. So she only just now stopped taking that money. Then she said that she will end private prisons. Do you believe her?
Right before she started running again, she liquidated all of her assets. Basically, so the money that she has couldn't be traced and tied to anything in particular. When you get busted doing something like that, and you know the uproar was nationwide. People were all over the, literally internationally, talking about her and these prison lobbyists while she was talking about incarceration immediately after her husband had came out and admitted that the role he played and sending so many black people to prison. So this act that she's doing is a protective act. It has nothing to do with the right thing. She's not doing it because it's the right thing, because if she knew what the right thing was, they wouldn't have been on a payroll to begin with.
That's true. Now, I want to flip it over to Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders seems to have a lot of support from young black voters. I actually just saw two of them on the Real News Network giving an interview on why they were supporting his candidacy. But these older black voters, I don't know any exact ages. I would say 30 years on up, maybe 40 years on up. But she enjoys a lot of support among the black political class. You just had the chairman of the Black Political Caucus, a Democrat from North Carolina, came out and endorsed her. And so she enjoys a lot of support from these black people, where, again, you know, Bernie Sanders is mostly finding his support among these young black voters. Why isn't he attractive to these older black voters, in your opinion?
You know, one of the gifts that I have as a poet and an artist is the ability to be able to step back from my own lifetime and look at things over the course of generations and see patterns in that way and see a larger picture and how they unfold, where individuals are just components of a bigger circumstance. And every 4 years, we get another great white, old, kind, white guy hope, which is supposed to be a revolution. And I think the elders are kind of tired of that. You know, they didn't want to hear it with Ron Paul. They didn't want to hear it before that with the dude with all the charts. I forget what his name was. Maybe you remember
Ross
his name.
Ross Perot.
They're just tired of it because they've seen it over and over and over again. These young people have not seen this often. Some of them are voting for the first time. Like some of them were voting for the first time with Ross Perot and the Ross Perot revolution. So we always get these guys who seem to be the type to have our best interests at heart. And are actually really inside. They're a part of the very system. Now, Bernie Sanders stands out just like Ross Perot stood out, just like the people before him stand out. But again, I think these elders are like, we have seen this before, and maybe that's the reason.
Then why would they then turn around and support Hillary Clinton? That doesn't make much sense to me, Max.
No, I can't, again, I can't explain why they're doing something, but I can again say either they don't know the truth or they don't care. It really is just that simple. Because if they knew the truth, they wouldn't be supporting her for a presidential election. They would be campaigning to send her and her husband to prison for high crimes.
Now, Bernie Sanders, at the end of November of 2015, he introduced a bill that he co-sponsored with another Democrat that is called the Justice is Not for Sale Act 2015. This bill, as stated by him, and I've actually read the bill, and it does call for the abolishment of private prisons and jails in this country. Why should black people or black voters support that bill?
Well, if only for that simple reason alone, it would be just about worth voting for Bernie Sanders for that, if he was to uphold it. What it does is end private prisons within a two-year period, forcing the federal government and states to transfer whatever prisoners they have in private facilities to state and federal facilities. And it just gives them 2 years to end this process and then bans them from continuing to operate in the United States after that. Now, it doesn't free anybody, but it's the first legislation since the 1860s to address the concept of buying and selling human beings on the open market in the form of stocks and bonds. That alone is a big shift in consciousness and could start a landslide after that, because we start having to address each situation. We have to start looking at why these people were even in existence to begin with and where else they are and what they're doing. And it will open many doors that could eventually lead to the true abolition of slavery in the United States, where we no longer use people as property.
Let me ask you this, Max, because I'm trying to figure it out. You know, since the announcement, you know, Bernie Sanders, along with the senator from Minnesota, I think, I'm trying to recall his name, Keith Ellison. They right. both held a press conference, even though Keith Ellison didn't introduce the bill or co-sponsor it. He is a supporter of the bill, and he was in the press conference announcing this bill with Bernie Sanders in November. And we were, as abolitionists, really excited about this bill, but we haven't heard much about the bill since then, not even from one of the sponsors of the bill, Bernie Sanders. Why do you think that is? And this is a two-part question. Why do you think it is Bernie Sanders is not yelling from the rooftops that he has a bill that would abolish private prisons and jails in the United States, which have played a major role in what people are calling mass incarceration, which you and I recognize as a continuation of slavery? And you know, he's not really talking about it. And why isn't he attacking or being more aggressive towards Hillary Clinton, his challenger for the Democratic nomination? Why isn't he attacking her on the issues of her lifelong support? Well, maybe political lifelong support of private prisons and jails.
Well, this thing with the Bernie Sanders issue regarding the Justice is Not for Sale Act, for me, I take it as a personal offense, really, because I had a lot to do with the campaigning of getting this thing out there. I've spoken with his campaign managers. I've spoken with his personnel that work here in South Carolina and elsewhere, organizing for the Bernie Sanders campaign. And we spent quite some time just lobbying them to even address the situation. And when they finally came out with the Justice Is Not for Sale Act, as you said, we were very excited about it. I in particular was excited. And the people like Mugadeen Ibarra, who worked with me on getting this into play, were very excited too. Now, what I saw afterwards at the first national Democratic debate, where he didn't even mention it once, the bells went off in my head. I knew what was being done right then and there. It was basically, why don't you guys just take this and shut up. Like, really, you're just getting in my way. I'm trying to explain about the money and the bankers, and here you come with this slavery stuff. So take this. That makes you happy. It's a historical incident. If you want it to pass, You can't pay for it. That's basically what it was being said. Because he was not going to mention it, had not mentioned it since. Not once have I heard him mention this bill, which is so historically important and will affect America in such a drastic way. Now, I think the reason that he isn't doing that is because he doesn't want to lift the carpet up in his infested home. He's protecting Hillary. Hillary and Bernie right now are the face of democracy, literally. And you can't expose one without exposing the other. See, we found out one of the reasons they even opened the door for me to talk is because I exposed Vermont. I came to them with the Vermont is Ferguson report showing how right now, with a less than 2% black population in the state of Vermont, they're arresting African Americans at 14 to 1. 14 to freaking 1 when you've only got a 2% population. And how they were using not only prison for profit, but they were using human trafficking in Vermont, where they were sending people out to prisons in other places and sharing the cost with them. So I don't think he's willing to uncover how deep and how corrupt and how involved the prison industry is with modern politics, particularly with the face of democracy being Hillary Clinton.
Why introduce the bill at all?
To shut us up. We have grown largely over the past few years, Scotty, going from just a few people out there raising our voices to thousands together just on one organization and tens of thousands across the country and across the world. We reach several countries every week. We've made this an issue that people have talked about, but we haven't given them any choice. They've got to talk about it because everywhere you turn, there's an abolitionist telling you, yo, what about that slavery thing? So in order to shut us up, they gave us a bone. It was really just that simple. Here's a bone, now go away. But see, that's what Lincoln did to Frederick Douglass as well. It's the same thing Lincoln did to Frederick Douglass. He never wanted to free the slaves, and he said as much. It wasn't his interest. He was a racist slaver himself. Probably a mulatto, but that's neither here nor there. Nonetheless, Lincoln had to work through and with Lincoln and with the rest of Congress to get what he could accomplish. And at the very end, of course, we know that he was betrayed by Lincoln and by Congress, particularly by South Carolina representatives in Congress, with the 13th Amendment exception clause to prison.
So as we get ready to wrap it up, is there anybody out there, any candidate out there, Republican or Democrat, Green Party, Libertarian Party, is there any candidate out there for the abolitionists, for those who do vote?
Well, first, let me make an admission. I consider, and it's maybe just my opinion, but I consider myself politically immature. I really haven't been involved with politics because I detest politics in all shapes and forms, and I just can't stand it. And I don't trust politicians no further than I can throw them. I don't care who you are, from councilman to president. If you're in politics, you're a part of the problem. That's how I look at you. Now, is anybody in this part of, in this problem, this huge system of oppression that I would say might have our interests? No. The only reason I would suggest anybody vote in this election is simply for the Justices Not for Sale Act. If you're going to throw us a bone, then we're going to make do with it. We're going to see what we can do to bring this into play. We're in a campaign now called Kill Bill, which means basically to expose Hillary and leave nothing left but Bernie Sanders. And then we're going to hold him to his promises or else. So that's our plan. At least that's the plan that I'm going with. And I think it has the potential for winning. It's not about supporting Bernie. It's about freedom. And that's all I care about. Freedom for the millions who are oppressed in cages, being abused, suffering, and dying every day. That's a priority.
Is there anything in closing you would like to leave the listeners with?
Can I say a BS word?
You say whatever if you want to say.
If you're not listening to New Abolitionist Radio every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on blacktalkradionetwork.com, and it comes out tomorrow at 8 p.m., then you're bullshit. You don't really want to know. We're here to tell you the truth. Come on and listen. Our archives are huge. You can start right now if you like, but you need to know the truth. Thanks for having me on, Scotty. Appreciate you always, brother.
You're welcome, Max. Thank you for joining us. This has been Scotty Reed with a Black Talk Radio News Report. Support the production of independent media by making a donation to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. For more information, visit blacktalkmediaproject.org.